Okay, so good morning, everyone. Again, I'm going to post it together. Again, in the chat box is the source sheet. If you didn't receive it earlier, it's the same source sheet as was emailed out last night and today. So if you didn't see it last night or today, you can get it here in the chat box. But if you already have it, you don't. This is all the same. All the same. So we are in our final class of You Do What on Passover, looking at the customs and practices and the foods of Passover. So the first week we talked specifically about the foods of the Pesach Seder. And then last week we spoke about some of the actions of the Passover Seder. And now I want to look at, again, I want to go back to some of the food, and I want to speak about some of the food that we do, or more specifically focus on the foods that we don't eat. And I'm going to use the word we, and I'm going to put a very large asterisk next to the word we, to say that I am an Ashkenaz descendant. My grandparents are from Poland and Germany, maybe a little bit of Russia. So I'm coming at this from a particularly Ashkenazic perspective. And while we will talk about Sephardic practices, the focus that I'm taking today is a much more Ashkenazi focus. And for those who are Sfaradim here, at least the first half you'll understand, but maybe the second half you won't even have any idea what I'm talking about, but hopefully you'll learn a little bit of something about some of the practices that there are Jews around the world who have foods that they eat and that they don't eat, and talking a little bit of the history and some of the law that surrounds these foods or that people eat, or Jews eat, or more specifically that Jews avoid eating. So with that, we can jump right in. I'll give you the introduction. Is that the foods that I'm focusing on, two categories. One of them is called kitniot, and we'll talk a little bit what on earth kitniot are. And the other one is a Yiddish word, which is gebracht. If you've never heard of gebracht, that makes a lot of sense. We'll spend a little bit of time talking about this idea of gebracht. Again, it's a Yiddish word, and we'll hopefully have a little bit more of an understanding of to what these practices are. Well, so we'll start with kitniot. Kitniot on source number one. So we have here source number one, the following, a quote from the Talmud. The Talmud tells us in a Mishnah, earliest rabbinic statement, these are the types of grain with which a person fulfills his or her obligation to eat matzah on the first night of Passover, with wheat, with barley, with spelt, with rye, and with oats. Right. So all of the matzah that you're going to find on the market are going to be made of wheat, barley, spelt, rye, or oats. Those are what's on the market, and that's what matzah needs to be made from. The Gemara, the commentary on the Mishnah, gives us a little bit more and says, still in source number one, the middle paragraph of source number one, from where are these matters derived? How do we know that these are the only things you can make matzah? How do I know I can't make a rice flour matzah? How do I know I can't make a soy matzah? Well, how do I know that it's got to be these five? From where is this matter derived? Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish said, and likewise, the sage from the school of Rabbi Yishmael taught, and likewise, the sage from the school of Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov taught, that the verse states, the Torah tells us, you shall eat no leavened bread with it, talking about the Paschal offering, which we spoke about 2 weeks ago, so that the Paschal offering was eaten with matzah, no bread may be eaten with it. 7 days you shall eat with it matzah, the bread of affliction. This verse indicates that only with substances that will come to a state of leavening, a person fulfills his or her obligation to eat matzah with them, provided he or she prevents them from becoming leavened. In other words, the Torah here says we have to eat matzah and we cannot eat chametz. So if it can become chametz, it can become matzah. And if it cannot become chametz, it cannot be matzah. In other words, the only thing that we can eat for matzah is food that could become leavened, but we get to it, we stop it before it gets leavened. We bake it before it rises. But it's only foods that could rise can become matzah. And so the idea there is that there are foods that can become leavened. If they cannot leaven, if they don't leaven, they can't become matzah, and they're also not going to become chametz. And the rule is, the assumption is, the only grains that can leaven are one of those five. It's wheat, barley, rye, oats, spelt. Only those five, when they're mixed with water, does it actually leaven? If you take that, grind it up into flour and add water to it, whatever is happening there, Jewish law determines that is not considered leavening. That is something else, but it's not leavening. And so that cannot become chametz, and therefore it cannot be used as matzah. Now, the Gemara, continuing in the third paragraph in source number one, the Gemara notes, the Mishnah is not in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who said, rice is a full-fledged type of grain and one is liable for karet for eating it in its leavened state, like all other types of grain. The Gemara here is saying, our Mishnah, and this is how we practice, our Mishnah is that only those five grains can become chametz. Grind them up, mix them with water, it leavens, that becomes chametz. Those are the only five. And the Talmud here is telling us that is not like the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Because Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says there's a sixth grain. There is another thing that can become chametz. And you know what that thing is? Rice. Now, we don't hold that way. We hold, like the Mishnah says, only five things can become chametz. Wheat, barley, oat, rye, spelt, grind it up into flour, mix it with water, let it sit. That is chametz. Anything else is not chametz. And yet, there is an opinion out there, which we don't hold like, we don't accept it, but there is an opinion out there that says that rice does have the potential to become chametz. And if you were to grind it up, mix it with water, it would be chametz. So that's important to note, but that is in the books. Nonetheless, as I said before, rice, we agree, is not chametz. Source number two is also from the Talmud. There's a Mishnah, and we read this Mishnah 2 weeks ago. We were talking about the foods at the Seder. The Mishnah tells us, they brought before him, the people bring before the person leading the Seder, at least two cooked dishes. Right? And we talked about the two cooked dishes, was the shank bone, we talked about beets or other things, the egg. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. But the Talmud here says, not everyone used to always use a shank bone. There was a time, and this is what the Talmud says in the second paragraph of source number two. What are these two cooked foods mentioned in the Mishnah? Rav Huna said, beets and rice. You know what the two cooked foods they would put out are? Beets and rice. Rice. The Gemara relates that Rava would seek beets and rice for his Passover meal, his meal on Passover, since this ruling came from Rav Huna's mouth. In other words, there is a long-standing practice in the times of the Talmud, people eating rice on Pesach. As we saw earlier, there was an opinion that thought that rice could become chametz, but we said that the Mishnah doesn't accept that. We don't accept that. And here we have two great rabbis, Rav Huna and Rava, who would eat rice at their Passover Seder. So this is, I think, significant because among Ashkenazi Jews, typically, we do not eat rice on Pesach. That rice, I'm going to put in the category of kitniot. There are certain foods that Ashkenazim choose not to eat, even though, as we've seen, they are not chametz, even though they are not leaven, even though they are not bread, they cannot become bread. There are certain foods that Ashkenazi Jews, that Jews, European Jews, avoided eating, and that's in the category of rice, and also these things called kitniot, and we're going to define kitniot hopefully in one more source. But before then, yeah, questions.
So does that mean it's okay to eat it? Svaradim, don't they eat rice on Pesach?
Svaradim do eat rice on Pesach. We'll get there.
Okay.
Don't leave too early. I'm going to tell you that Ashkenazim should not eat rice on Pesach, even though Svaradim will eat rice on Pesach. We're going to see that the general practice, accepted practice among Ashkenazi Jews is to not eat rice and other kitniot on Pesach. And even among these Svaradim, who do eat rice, we'll talk about it. Many of them don't necessarily have a free-for-all rice party. We'll get there.
Okay.
Good question. Any other questions before we move on? So, as I pointed out, among Ashkenazi European Jews, there is a standard practice for a long time not to eat kitniot and not to eat food like rice. So what is this kitniot food that we're talking about? So it's a hard word to pin down, right? So in source number three, I give you from a book. It's a book. It's also a website online. This Rabbi Eliezer Melamed is a contemporary rabbi in Israel. He goes through, he has a beautifully explained all the rules and laws of Passover. He's printed books, but it's also available for free online. And there's a link there in source number three. So in a chapter, when he talks about kitniot, there's a little note in the English edition. In the Hebrew, it just says kitniot, but in the English, they have a footnote. And the editor's note, We have refrained from translating the term kidney yolk, since there is no precise equivalent in English. And an imprecise translation would be misleading, right? You know, they don't translate, what is kidney yolk? I can't give you a good translation, because whatever translation I'm going to give you could be misleading. Kidney yolk refers to specifically to members of the legume family, and indeed, legumes specifically were introduced in European crop rotation systems in the medieval era. As currently used, the category kidney yolk includes species that are not legumes, and not every member of the legume family is considered kidney yolk. Ashkenazi, so Effie Lebo points out in the chat box, Ashkenazi don't eat rice because it was an unknown staple in Eastern Europe, as in they didn't know about it. So that's why they don't eat rice? Is that, Effie, is that what you're saying?
That's what I'm saying, yes. Okay, I am Sephardic, but I married an Ashkenazi, so I follow the Ashkenazi way. But in my own family in Israel, they do eat rice.
Absolutely, yes, yes. In Israel today, it can be very difficult. If you don't eat rice or you don't eat kidney yolk on Pesach, it can be some day. Kidney yolk are all over the place in Israel in the year 20. Last time I was in Israel for Pesach, like 2018, kidney yolk all over the place. And I'm sure it's all the more so in 2022. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think being an unknown staple is the issue, because potatoes were an unknown staple, and that's what we survive on.
So we're going to see in a couple.
Potatoes were always a staple in Eastern Europe. When I got married, my husband said that his family.
Going back 1,000 years.
So let's take a look. Let's take a look. In source number 4, we're going to read from the words of a 13th century French rabbi, and we're going to read from two 13th century French rabbis. Right. So we're going to read exactly what this. So let's hear from a rabbi living in France in the 13th century. See what they have to say. So source number 4 is the comments of this rabbi, Rabbeinu Peretz. He lived in France, 13th century. So he writes the following. He says, regarding kidney yolk, and then he uses words, I guess, in French that I don't know what they are. Foyes, I don't know. I didn't know how to translate. I don't know what it is. Polio riz, I'm assuming riz is like rice. Lentils and the like. Our rabbis have the practice to treat them as prohibited and not to eat them on Passover at all. He says, many great ones are permissive. You can't say that in 13th century France, all the Jews were avoiding these foods. You can't say that, because there are great rabbis who are permissive. However, he says, it is very difficult to be lenient on something that the world is strict from the age of the earlier sages. So in his mind, this is not something that happened just in the 13th century. He's remembering his grandfather used to also not eat it. This is something that was a practice that he knew of. And presumably, why are we strict? So presumably, they were not strict because these actually leaven. For they did not make a mistake about things that even school children know. And this is explicit in the Talmud that only the five grains leaven. In other words, if you're going to tell me, why do they avoid these kidney yolk? Oh, because maybe if you grind them up into flour, mix them with water, they'll turn into chametz. He says, that is definitely not the case, because it doesn't take a genius to read source number 1 that we saw. He says, people know, even the school children know, they learn in school. We know it can't become chametz. These aren't chametz. That's not why they avoid it. Therefore, he says, it seems that this practice not to eat kidney yolk all of Passover is not because of a concern of leavening, for that would be a mistake. Rather, it was a rabbinic injunction, since kidney yolk are cooked in a pot. And grains are also cooked in a pot, like porridge. If we were to permit kidney yolk, perhaps people would mix them up and permit porridge, since they are both cooked in pots. He said, look, maybe the concern was that you walk into someone's house, you see them cooking something on the stove. You think, oh, wow, they're cooking pork. Maybe you're allowed to, maybe you can cook chametz. Maybe you just can't, bake, eat bread, but maybe you can have porridge. Maybe you can have certain types of oatmeal or something like that. People would make mistakes. And so Rabbeinu Peretz in source number 4 is thinking maybe the reason that the injunction began was because people were getting confused. What can you eat? What can you not eat? They didn't have, guides. They couldn't just Google and said, what can I eat on Pat? They didn't have that. So people were getting mixed up. And he says, additionally, and there are also places that they make bread out of them. Rice bread or this. They make breads out of these, out of beans and lentils. just like they do with the five grains. Therefore, it is likely that they will be swapped out by people who are not Torah scholars. The average person not going to know. They're going to think, oh, I can make bread out of this. I can make bread out of this. They're not going to realize. And this is not like other vegetables like cabbage and leek and the like, because they are unlike, they are entirely unlike grain. There's a line here. It's not like everything is forbidden. Certainly the five grains are forbidden. And then certainly, you know, cabbages are not going to be mistaken. But he thinks there's some gray area in the middle that is certainly not leavening. It is 100,000% not really chametz, he says. But there's really a chance that people could get confused. And he writes, even though the Torah, the Talmud, explicitly permits rice, this was specifically in their days when everyone was an expert in the laws of permissible and forbidden foods. But now, in the later generations, this injunction is certainly appropriate. So for him, for Rabbeinu Peretz in source number 4, why do we start getting concerned about various legumes and rice and all different types of kidney oat? The concern is because people could get confused. They're not going to know. They're going to mix things up. And they might, God forbid, end up eating chametz on Pesach. And that is a real big problem. So the rabbis, these rabbis were concerned. Let's be machmir. Let's be strict. Let's not eat certain foods that are in this like gray area, even though they're really not in the gray area at all, but they're sort of maybe could lead to confusion. Let's avoid them entirely. That's what he writes, 13th century France. Another explanation. Source number 5, the Orchot Chaim, Rabbi Aaron HaKohen, 13th century Provence, also in France, but southern France. He writes the following, other things like rice, millet, beans, lentils, and other kidney oat, even if you kneaded them in boiling water and got them to leaven, you really like somehow got them to leaven, they're permissible, but they don't become chametz. Because whatever that we would call it, maybe in English, we'd call it leavening. But in the eyes, if you put on your Torah goggles, your Torah glasses, you wouldn't call that leavening. I don't know what you'd call it, but it's not leavening. Therefore, many have the custom to eat cooked rice, which is called arroz on Pesach. So he says there are people who have this concern. Yet, those that avoid it, why do people avoid it? What's the reason, according to him, why are there people who don't eat them? Because of wheat seeds mixed in that won't be noticed. Because maybe you've got the big stores of wheat and big stores of, of whatever, lentils. They're stored near each other. The wind comes and blows some of the wheat, some of the chaff, whatever. Things get blown over into the other pile. And you might get, and maybe it was actually really common, for there to be a little bit of cross-contamination. I mean, cross-contamination among products happens in the year 2022. I'm sure it happened in the 13th century Provence as well, that sometimes you get grains and things that get mixed up. So that's his concern. He says the people who are practiced to be strict and don't eat it because of concern of cross-contamination between the chametz getting into these other foods. And that's that opinion. And in the end, Maharil, another opinion, 14th century, now we're in Worms in Germany, the Maharil, Rabbi Yaakov Molin, he says in source number 6, kidney oat by the 14th century, right? We're now like 100 years or so after, by the 14th century, he writes, kidney oat in all forms. There is a rabbinic decree against cooking them on Pesach, even though they do not leaven. Since they are not among the five grains, nonetheless, they decreed against it. Says by the 14th century, he's saying this is a general practice that we all have. We don't do this. And one must not say that since it is not biblically prohibited, there is no concern, for this is still a rabbinic prohibition. He says, even though we're going to sit here in 2022 and say, do we need to be concerned anymore? Come on, like what's the likelihood? It's not really biblically prohibited. We can all agree that it's not chametz. Nonetheless, Rabbi Yaakov Molin, writing in the 14th century Germany, says, we have accepted this as a prohibited food. And just like I'm not going to go eat my loaf of bread on Pesach, I'm also not going to eat my kidney oat on Pesach. And that's been firmly standing really from the 14th century until today. The accepted Ashkenazic practice is to avoid eating kidney oat. But I will say, going back to a source number 5, Rabbi Aharon HaKohen, who was concerned about the cross-contamination. So there are many Sfaradim, I know a few, who, even if they're going to have rice on Pesach, They don't just grab a box of rice off the shelf, pour it into water, but they actually sift through it and they make sure that there's no cross-pollination or cross-contamination, because that is a legitimate concern. They just never accepted upon themselves. They're going to just have a wholesale, we're not eating this. They'll still eat it, but many of them will be careful that they're going to make sure that there's no chametz that's mixed in. I don't know in 2022 how often it is that chametz actually gets mixed in, but even among Sephardic Jews, many have the practice to be still a little bit careful. But certainly among Ashkenazi Jews, for the last hundreds of years, we've had the practice not to eat kibbeh, not to eat these legumes, rice, and other types of foods like this. Any questions on that before moving on? So I have for you in source number 7, this Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan of 19th century Poland, a little more recent. He writes in source number 7, one should keep this practice all the days of Pesach, right? Certainly. He's in Poland. He's not eating rice. He's not eating kitniot on Pesach. Nonetheless, he writes, in a time of need that a person has no food to eat, it is permissible to cook anything except the 5 grains. Because we know this is not chametz. You can't say that this is actually leavening. It's not. We have a practice that Ashkenazic Jews and Jews in Poland in the 19th century restrict. We're not going to eat this. But if you're stuck, you have no food. I'm not sure what it means you have no food. You don't have a carrot. Like, you have no food. Okay, you have to eat something. So you can cook these grains. All you have is lentils in the closet in the pantry. So you can cook those lentils. Nonetheless, in such a case, one should prefer kidney oat to rice, millet, or retzki, I don't know what retzki is, which are more similar to the 5 grains, and there is more of a reason for the decree. And it is, he says, you should be, you know, mindful. If you're going to have, you know, lentils or bake bread out of rice flour, do the lentils, right? Don't make rice flour bread, even though it's right, because if you're making something that looks so much like bread, That was part of the reason for the prohibition in the first place. So, okay, we're going to be lenient. You have nothing to eat. You have to eat food. So you can, you know, eat this food. But at least try to adhere to the spirit of the law, even if there's a dispensation here. So, you know, don't just make anything. You know, be thoughtful of what you're making and making sure that it's, you know, chametz free. There's no cross-contamination. And that you're not making something that really looks like bread.
Rabbi, yes. I have a question. So sure. Then why now when you go, they make Passover bagels, they look, you just said keeping to the spirit of the, that doesn't work for me.
It's a good question. It's a really good question. There's a particular, I don't have a good answer for you. All I'm going to tell you is a funny story, but I'm not going to give you an answer. So I'm telling you right now, this is not going to be the answer. But the story is that, my family back in Michigan, there's a particular bakery, Kosher Passover Bakery, or a caterer that makes these delicious Kosher Passover cakes. And the joke every year, always, is that we say, you know, so it comes out at the Seder and we eat it. We say, wow, this is delicious. And then my aunt always makes the same joke. My aunt says, this is great. Next year, I'll get the Kosher Passover one. But you can't, you know, it tastes like chametz. You can't really tell. It's a good question. It's a good question. If this decree happened because of the potential for making mistakes, you know, people are making like pizzas out of
exactly pizza.
It looks like chametz. How is that okay? But rice is not okay. It's a really good question, and I wish I had a compelling answer, but I don't. This is what we do. This is the practice. I don't have a good reason for you. It could be that if these types of foods were proliferating in the 13th century, the rabbis would have said no good. But it's because in the 2022, it's so common and so easy, and we're not going to make a decree against it. But maybe 1,000 years ago, they might have. I don't know.
Okay.
And a contemporary one is quinoa, which really looks like a grain.
Yeah, quinoa. I know. I'm not going to weigh in on quinoa right now, but Rabbi Torchiner has a whole series on the status of quinoa. There was when quinoa first became a thing eaten in North America, there were, I think even in Toronto, you had this group of rabbis said, no good. This group of rabbis said, definitely good. And it was like the huge thing. Would you eat quinoa? It was the big thing. Yeah. Yeah. Effie, sorry. Go ahead.
Bye-bye. Yeah. When we came to Israel, my mom was horrified to see that there was baking powder kosher for Pesach. Baking powder makes the cake rise. So what's the point?
There you go. It's a good point. It's a good question. And I wish I had good answers to these excellent questions, but I don't. But it's a good point. Meaning, if the Torah doesn't want us to have chametz, so this goes to the larger question of those the letter of the law versus the spirit of the law, using loopholes for various. These are really good questions that I'll just say are above my pay grade, but I will tell you. Ask Rabbi Turchiner. Tell me what he says.
Okay.
Very good. I'll punt it to him. But it's a really good question. How do we manage all of this? And especially when times are rapid, foods are changing. I mean, Mark was raising a good point. Quinoa. No, I promise you that Rabbi Yisrael Meir Kagan of 19th century Poland had never heard of quinoa. What does he know from quinoa? Certainly, you know, in 14th century Germany or in 13th century Provence, they weren't eating quinoa. I mean, I don't think they were eating quinoa. These are like these new foods, and how do these rabbis interact with these new things? These are really good questions. And this is why they pay, you know, some rabbis the big bucks to be able to really tangle with these questions. These are all really good. Just one last point that I want to bring up of the Mishnah Berurah in source number 7, Rabbi Kagan points out in parentheses, although it's not a parenthetical, it gets an important comment, but he points out in the brackets, it is obvious that the same is true for someone who is ill, even not deathly ill. One can cook if he needs, right? And certainly if one is really gravely ill, everything goes out the window. Someone's gravely ill, you can make them a pizza. I mean, they probably don't need a pizza, but if they were dying and the doctor said the only thing that will save this person's life is a fresh loaf of rye bread, you bake that rye bread as best as you can. I mean, not as fast as you can. Don't make chametz, you know. I mean, don't make matzah if he needs rye. But you understand the idea that all of these injunctions fly out the window when there's a risk of life. And he says even if someone is not deathly ill, when it comes to kidney oat, we're very quick to drop it because, again, it's not really chametz and it's a relatively recent, I mean, relatively recent to hundreds of years old, but it's relatively new. And so in certain circumstances, we'll waive it pretty quickly.
I got permission to eat kidney oat because I'm vegan and there's nothing, no protein except quinoa, nothing to eat the entire week.
There you go. Yeah. So I imagine that falls here under what Rabbi Kagan is saying. And yeah, is that if you're in a place of need, what are you going to eat? There's permission there. I'd say. Let's move to source. At the end of source number 7, Rabbi Kagan just sort of quotes this idea that even if you're going to cook, you're going to cook it. He wants you to sort of do some things to the flour to make it not to be very careful that it's not going to rise. They just wanted to put it in boiling water first. It'll sort of slow the rising process. Even if it starts to rise, it's not really rising. So he's concerned. He wants to make sure that, you know, this is not, you know, a free dispensation. You know, do whatever you want. He's, hey, if you're really in a place of need, there's nothing else to eat. What are you going to eat? What food is there to eat? So you can eat this, but, you know, it's not a free for all, you know, do whatever you want. Make sure you eat, try not to make like rice bread, you know, make something else. And if you can try to boil it in water first so that it's not going to really rise, that sort of helps a little bit. Even if it doesn't taste so great, but we're trying to adhere to this, to avoiding kidney, if you're Ashkenazi, trying to avoid eating this to whatever degree is possible. I give you in source number 8, we're not going to read this all right now, but in source number 8 is from the OU. The Orthodox Union sort of gives on their website, they have a list of all the foods that they are kidney. Because again, we saw earlier that what is in the category of kidney oat is a hard food. What is it? So here, the OU gave this, you know, master list of beans, buckwheat, cardamom, fennel seeds, millet, lentils, hemp, flax seed, sunflower seeds, soybeans, rice, rapeseed, poppy seeds. And then other types of foods that are not, but there's different types of guar gum, locust bean gum. I don't know what these things are. And then there are other categories, amaranth, peanuts, that may be kidney oat. We're not going to go in down that road, but there's a long discussion about the status of peanuts as kidney oat and then the various oil derivatives of these foods. Or this is just a brief class, but maybe next year before Pesach, we can spend a whole long class talking about the status of peanuts and the various oil derivatives from these kidney oat. But I'm not going to go down that road right now. But if you're interested in, you're not really sure, what about various types of oils and peanuts, you can send me an email. We can have a long conversation later. But that's just a little footnote to this list, is that there's a lot to be said about almost all of these. But we're not going to go down that road right now. But just briefly, hopefully this has been a helpful summary of this idea of kidney oat, the Ashkenazim standard accepted practice among Ashkenazim in 2022, even in 2022 Canada, is not to eat kidney oat, unless, as Rabbi Kagan had said, unless there's a great need among Ashkenazim. And among Sephardim, they're not strict about, they don't avoid eating kidney oat at all. Some are careful to at least sift through their kidney oat before they eat it. They just make sure that there's no chametz, there's no flour or other grains in there, that it's purely kidney oat and nothing else. And that's the accepted practice, I think, in 2022. North America and in Israel, around the world, Ashkenazim avoid kidney oat, and Sephardim go right ahead and eat their kidney oat. And in places like Israel, where there are so many Sephardim and the feel, and this, maybe you can ask Idan to talk about this on, next time if you're learning with Idan Rakovsky, you can talk about the Israeli experience for an Ashkenazi living in Israel. I think that it's kidney oats are all over the place in Israel as well. Even among the places that are Ashkenazi, you see a lot of kidney oat being consumed as well. But that's a little bit about kidney oat. Any questions on kidney oat before we go to the very Eastern European gebrachs? Okay, great. So now let's talk about gebrachs. So what is this thing gebrachs? Has anyone here ever heard about gebrachs before? I would not expect any Sephardim to have heard about it. Gebrachs itself is a Yiddish word. But this is in the books. It's a really interesting idea here. So source number 9, gebrachs. Some Jews will not eat anything cooked with matzah on Pesach, including matzah meal. The writer says that he or she is not included in this group. They refrain from eating any food that is gebracht. The Hebrew word is called matzah shruya, which literally is matzah that's been soaked. But since this custom originated in Eastern Europe, the Yiddish name is used much more, gebracht. When I asked about the etymology of the term, some guessed perhaps related to the word bracha. That's not correct. The term gebracht means, in Yiddish, any Yiddish speakers here, gebracht means broken, as one would break matzah into soup, right? You take your matzah, you grind it up. Oh, sorry, the source sheet. Yep, okay, source sheet's back there. Okay. As you would, break matzah up and crumble it into your soup, like matzah farfel or something like that. That's broken matzah. And there's a site here that explains the past participle of Yiddish, bruk, is to break. So gebrucht would be broken. That's this practice. There are Jews who avoid eating broken matzah. That doesn't mean matzah that they break. What they mean by broken matzah is you crumble it up and bake it into something else. Matzah meal, breaking it up and putting it into soup, mixing it with anything else. There are people who eat, when they eat matzah, they only eat straight matzah. They will not put matzah in any other food. That's this practice, gebracht. Clear so far? So is it permissible? So in source number 10, the sages teach, back in the Talmud, says, the sages taught, the following foods do not come to a state of leavening. Foods that have already been baked or boiled or overboiled in hot water. In other words, if I bake matzah and I mix it with water and put it in the oven, even if I crumble it up into matzah flour, mix it with water and bake it into something, the Talmud tells me that does not become leaven. It was already baked. You can't remake chametz. If it's already been baked into matzah, it is good 100%. It can't become chametz anymore. And Rashi says, the commentary Rashi says, any bread that has been baked that was then submerged in water does not become chametz. If you had regular flour and submerged in water, it could become chametz. But you have matzah, mix it with flour, cannot become chametz. So at first glance, this idea of saying, well, I'm not going to crumble my matzah into soup. I'm not going to crumble my matzah into matzah meal and bake a cake out, matzah meal cake out of it. People who say they don't want to do that, there should be no basis for it. Yet, in source number 11, the Talmud in Psachim, another passage in the Talmud, tells the following story. The Gemara relates, Rav Papi permitted the foods of the household of the exilarch to mash roasted grains into a pot of food. Right, so he would say, we'll take the, I think what he's talking about is, you know, take matzah, mash it up, and, you know, make a stew out of it. Rava said, is there anyone who permits this matter in a place where servants are found? It's a weird statement, but Rava says, this is strange. This shouldn't be allowed. There are servants here. So what does he mean by there are servants here? Source number 12. The Talmud says, this is a tour. I didn't give you the, I apologize. I didn't give you the date here. I want to say 15th century or so. Rabbi Yaakov is his name. He lived an interesting life. He was born in Spain. He moved to France. He really had the Sephardic experience of Spain, but he also lived among Ashkenazim. He lived in both worlds. But he says the following, what does it mean that there are servants found? Source number 12. The Talmud says that baked matzah that was soaked is forbidden when there are servants around. Right? What did Rava say when Rava said it shouldn't be allowed because there are servants around? For they make light of the mitzvah. Right? They're going to be looking at it and say, oh, look at this. They're making porridge. They're mocking the system. Or there is a concern that they may mix flour with water, right? You look at someone, they've got a box of matzah meal, they pour water into this and they make something out of it. The onlooker looks and says, look, they're taking regular flour. Matzah meal, okay, it's matzah meal, but it looks like flour. It looks like regular flour. There's a concern, maybe, that it's going to look like flour. And so just as we saw these rabbis back in the 13th century France saying, don't eat the kidney oat because it looks like it might be leavening, It looks like it might be, you know, you're making chametz. So the tour, Rabbi Yaakov in source number 12 is saying the same thing may apply with crumbling up matzah and using matzah meal and making something out of matzah meal. And so that's reason number one, that there are some, I can't say many. It's really only an Eastern European thing. So of all the Jews, all the Jews don't eat chametz. The Ashkenazim don't eat kidney oat. This is like a subset of Ashkenazi Jews who avoid eating gebrachts, who avoid eating this matzah that's mixed with other things. So it's not everyone, but maybe one reason for their reason to be a little strict here is because of maybe we're going to be strict about kidney oat. Maybe we're going to be strict about this. People could make mistakes. So that's number one, reason number one that the Rabbi Yaakov gives in source number 12. There's another reason. And this is probably the most popular reason. Among the Jews in 2022 who are most careful about gebrachts is Chabad. The Chabad Jews are very, very strict about this. And so this is Rabbi Schneer, source number 13 is Rabbi Schneer Zalman of Liadi, one of the forerunners of the Chabad movement. So he himself, this is probably the reason that Chabad in 2022 is so strict about this, is because they're major rabbi, the foundational rabbi, was strict about this. And here's what he says. In reality, even if this is not a definite prohibition, right? Just like kidney oil, we cannot say that this is a problem. Nonetheless, one who is strict should be blessed. He says it's good to be strict. You don't have to be strict, but you should be blessed if you're strict. And it is not so shocking so as to say that there is no reason for this prohibition. Right, Rabbi Schneer Zalman of Liadi is saying, don't look at this and roll your eyes. He says, there's actually a reason to be strict here. It's not like out of left field. Rather, there is good reason to be strict, lest one transgress a biblical prohibition. He says, there is a biblical prohibition at stake here. You don't have to be strict. But if someone is strict, we shouldn't make light of it. For our eyes see that many matzot have a little flour on them after baking. And this is because the dough was thick and not kneaded well. He says, there's a concern. He says, look, I go to a matzah bake and I take the matzah out and I see there's still some flour on top of the dough. So what happens? I take my matzah, which has got a little flour. Let's say I crumble up this matzah and I mix it with water. I have flour here, raw flour that for whatever reason didn't bake. And now it's mixed with water. That's literally the recipe for chametz. So Rabbi Liadi says, our eyes see flour on top of matzah. And if you now mix that with water, you're going to have a problem. So the question, of course, this is the 18th century. Why did no one care? No one says anything until the 18th century? No one thinks about this at all? Why is this coming up now? Kidneyot was late, was the 13th century, and we already acknowledged there were rabbis who said this is like a newer issue that our many people didn't do. But he's saying there's really a potential that there's flour in this chametz. Why did no one think about this till the 18th century? And that which he writes, and that which this is never mentioned earlier, is because in earlier generations, they spent more time kneading the dough, right? They tried, they worked the dough really hard. But for the last 20 years or so, people knead the dough very quickly and they don't knead so well, right? I don't know if anyone's ever been to, I remember when I worked in a high school in New York 5 years ago. And we took a trip with these high schoolers to a matzah factory. Yeah, they thought it was a lot of fun. But you know, if you've been to a matzah factory before, they're working really quickly. There's a guy there with a watch, with a clock, and he's saying, you know, go, 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 move, move. They're going really quickly. I mean, these kids were high schoolers. They weren't really making the matzah to be eaten on Pesach, but in theory, you know, like everyone, they work really, really fast. They're working really quickly. They're just kneading the dough really quickly, rolling it out, putting it in the oven. They work everything, you know, the max time limit is 18 minutes, but in many of these matzah factories, they're doing it in 10 minutes. You're kneading dough in 10, that's, I mean, when I make bread, I have a machine, KitchenAid with a bread hook. So I'm not even doing it myself. I'm using a machine to do it, to knead the dough for me. But it's still, it takes, you know, it could take several minutes for it to knead it well. That's with a machine. In the 18th century, they're kneading it by hand. They're kneading it by hand and they're doing it very quickly. So there might be, it's not kneaded so well. There might be clumps of raw flour that don't really get properly mixed well. They don't properly bake well. So it comes out of the oven. You crumble it up, you mix it with something, you bake it into something else. You dip it in your water. You could have a recipe for chametz, Rabbi Liadi says. And so he says it could happen. I'm not sure he's presenting, I think he makes an argument that it really should be treated, you should not ever dip your matzah in water. You should never soak your matzah because he says like there's a real concern. At the same time, he opened by saying it's not really a definite prohibition and you don't have to do it, but if you do it, you should be blessed. So I'm not sure if you were to wake him up in the middle of the night, does he find the argument that he made compelling or not? It's compelling enough for people to be strict. It's not so compelling that everyone should be strict. So that's the general practice that he lays out. And as I said, this is, I think, most commonly found among Chabad Jews because Rabbi Schneur Zalman of Liadi was like the first Chabad rabbi. So the accepted practice, and I said, for some Ashkenazim, right? It's not all Ashkenazim. It's a subset of Ashkenazi Jews, and that's in source number 4. This is from the Chabad website. Those who are careful with gebrachts do not eat matzah balls, matzah brei, or matzah anything. In short, they do not cook with matzah at all. Also, when there is matzah on the table, they are very careful to keep it covered and away from any food that may have water in it. Drinks, soups, and vegetables that have been washed and very thoroughly and not thoroughly dried are all kept far away from matzah. Because there's a concern, but there's an interesting little caveat here that the Chabad has in the second paragraph of source number 14. On the eighth day of Passover, which exists only outside of the land of Israel, the gebuk's stringency does not apply. And all feast on matzah balls and matzah brei and dip their matzah into soups and salads. In fact, many have the custom to try to eat their matzah with as many liquids and wet food as possible, which I think the reason that this Chabad practice, I think this is specifically Chabad who goes all out with wet matzah on the eighth day of Pesach. I imagine the reason is because they don't want to convey the idea that it's actually chametz, right? Rabbi Liadi in source number 13 had stressed that this is not chametz. It's a good thing to be strict about, but it's not chametz. In order for people to understand that it's not chametz, they go all out on the last day of Passover and have all their matzah dipped in all as much wet stuff as they could in order to show that it's not really chametz. It's just a stringency that they have, and they're going to be strict for 7 out of 8 days. That's what they do. If you go to any Chabad, if you know any Chabad rabbis, I think this is the standard practice. They are careful on Gebracht. I actually had a meal with a Chabad family once, and they encouraged everyone to eat their matzah, to put their matzah in a little plastic bag, and to eat over the plastic bag, because they were very concerned about crumbs of the matzah getting on the table, and then someone spills their wine, it could be a problem. So people are very careful to, you know, keep their matzah in a little plastic bag and eat it over the little plastic bag and not to mix it with other things. But on the eighth day, they go all out and they have a lot of fun with it. Source number 15 is a contemporary standard practice. Source number 15, strictly speaking, this is the Mishnah Berurah who we saw earlier, Rabbi Kagan from Poland. So he writes, strictly speaking, there is no reason to assume that our matzah is forbidden in any way, in this way, especially nowadays when the matzah is so thin, right? Maybe in the 18th century in Russia, they weren't rolling it out so thinly. They were just sort of mixing the flour, mixing the water, kneading the dough really quickly, rolling it out, and then throwing it in the oven. You got really thick matzahs. But nowadays, our matzahs are crackers. They're so thin. So he says there's really no concern. And you can look at your matzah, and you could see most of our matzahs. You know, you buy the box of Manischewitz matzah, you open it up, you're not going to see particles of flour on top. Rabbi Liadi said, we all see it. We're not seeing it in Canada in 2022. So you don't have to be strict. Nonetheless, one who is strict in this manner should not be ridiculed. The Mishnah Berurah, Rabbi Kagan says, okay, you want to be strict? Be strict. You don't want to be strict? Certainly don't need to be strict. But you definitely shouldn't, you know, roll your eyes and make fun of the person. Why the person wants to be strict? Okay, they're going to be strict. But we don't have to be strict. And as I said, a contemporary practice among Ashkenazi Jews in 2022, I think, is not to be concerned with this. Among Chabad and among the Hasidic community, I think they are more concerned about Gebrachts, about this matzah shuria, about mixing matzah, baked matzah with liquid and other things. But I think the vast majority of Ashkenazim are not at all concerned about this. But I will say, as far as marketing is concerned, I remember growing up with kosher Passover cereals that were made from matzah meal. And it's actually very hard to find Manischewitz and Kedem and like these, I assume they have these companies and they have these same products in Canada as they did in the US. The cereals that I grew up with, you can't find anymore because of marketing. And I'd say in the last 10 years, 15 years, a lot more, because there were some subset of people who were careful about Gebrachts, a lot of the food manufacturers for Passover food have now shifted over to cater to them specifically because they didn't want to lose out on a market share. And it's actually, you can still find some matzah meal cereals, breakfast cereals, but I noticed in my own lifetime, Crispios, which were made of matzah meal, are now no longer made of matzah meal, they're made with potato starch because they're trying to cater to this subset. Even if it's a small subset, everyone's always concerned about their bottom line. I'm going to still buy the Crispios, whether they're made of matzah meal or not, but there are people who aren't going to eat it if it's made of matzah meal, so they changed the recipe. Now it's not made of matzah meal anymore. All right, it happens. No one goes into Passover thinking they're going to get the greatest tasting food anyway, but so that's a little bit. So that's a little bit of an introduction, hopefully, on these foods, on the foods that we eat, Passover foods. We spent a little bit of time talking about kidneyot, this practice of not eating kidneyot among Ashkenazim. And Sephardim, of course, have a lot of fun with kidneyot. Ashkenazim standard practice among most Ashkenazi Jews is to avoid eating kidneyot unless in a place of need. And we spent some time talking about this relatively newer practice of avoiding gebrachts that a concern either because people are getting confused and think, this goes back to what we said before, concern that you're making a pizza pie out of matzah meal, it's going to look like actual chametz. Some people avoided that. Or more, according to Rabbi Liadi, the concern is that there actually might be some flour here. And when you mix your matzah with water, you end up with chametz. But as I said, a standard Ashkenazi practice is not to be concerned about this. But there are people who do, and if they want to do that, okay, go ahead and then avoid. Don't dip your matzah in water. I'm not gonna mock you for doing that. And I think that's an important piece to really to close on is that Mishnah Berura, Rabbi Kagan in source number 15, the very last line, he says, one who is strict in this manner should not be ridiculed. And I leave you with a scene from Fiddler on the Roof, which is literally a fiddler on the roof, right? Tevye says, if we didn't have our traditions, if people are not familiar with Fiddler on the Roof, talking about Ashkenazi Jews, it's a very Ashkenazi story. But Tevye, Fiddler on the Roof, says, if we don't have our traditions, we'd be as flimsy, as stable as a fiddler on the roof. The guy's dead, fiddling on the roof. You fall off. Without our traditions, without the things that we always did, our lives could be very unstable. And our traditions ground us. Our traditions give us support. Our traditions give us a sense of feeling like we are doing something. Not only am I doing this today, but my parents and my grandparents and my great-grandparents and my great-great-grandparents, going all the way generations and generations back, you really have a sense of feeling grounded on something. And so when we talk about someone who has the practice not to eat something or to eat a certain food or not eat a certain food, I think it's a very dangerous thing for us to start opening the door, to start mocking and ridiculing this practice, that practice. Judaism is built on traditions. Going back 3 weeks ago, when we talked about the various foods that we eat at the Seder table, so much of it is just built on traditions. What does my family do? What does our family do? What do the Jewish people do? There's a really powerful thing to traditions. Tradition really gives us a basis and a framework and structure. And I think no matter what, if there's one takeaway that we can have from the last 3 weeks that we spent together, I think it should be about the role of tradition, on Passover, certainly, but the role of tradition in our lives in general. Because Passover, it's hard to overstate. The Passover is such a foundational experience for our community, for our religion. It's the basis of what Judaism is, and the basis, the foundation, formation of our nation. The fact that family tradition would play such a large role here makes a lot of sense, because what we are is tradition. We're traditional people. We hold to our traditions, and I don't think that's something to be ridiculed or mocked. It's something to really be proud of, that we can hold on to traditions for generations upon generations, I think is a really beautiful thing. And so as we now are getting ever closer to Passover, we've got a little over a week to go, we should be able to come to our Passover Seder, bringing the beautiful traditions that our family has, whether the Passover Seder, the foods that we eat, some of the practices that we do, maybe some of the foods that we avoid eating. We should be able to bring these traditions into our Passover, have a meaningful Passover, and also have an exciting, positive Passover, one that is enjoyable and makes us all very happy and proud to be Jews and proud to be inheritors of a beautiful practice and beautiful tradition. Any questions in anything that we've covered, either today or the 2 weeks before? Thank you all so much for coming and for learning together over the last several weeks. I know I've really enjoyed it. I hope you've enjoyed it as well. But it's been really fun for me to engage a lot of these texts that I haven't really thought of in a while. I learned a lot of new customs last week about eating strawberries for karpas. That was exciting for me. Maybe I'm going to do that this year just for fun. But I really enjoyed the learning, and I hope you've enjoyed as well. And I really appreciate. And I'm grateful for everyone who has come to take part in our learning together.
Thank you.
Chag Sameach to everyone. Chag Kasher V'Sameach to everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Yes,
Rabbi.
Yes.
When I told my grandchildren on Shabbos what you talked about with the green onions wrapped in the bag, and they wanted to practice. They thought it was the best thing ever.
Great. Do it. And let us know how it goes.
Oh, it will. I don't think it's a great idea. They seem too excited to smack each other over the head with the onions. It was hilarious. So, but we talked about it and it was interesting.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.